This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Known and Never podcast and football show brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and joining me this week, we have a bumper episode. We have our stat man, Dave Roberts, going to give us a preview in our upcoming game against the Baggies. We've got our FPL expert and analyst, Adam Dennett, and we are joined by our very special guest and friend of the show, Mr. Mike Landers. Gentlemen, we have a lot to cover this evening. We have got another fabulous win for Clarence, that home game against Coventry, which we're going to have a look at and, you know, just pull a few things out of that game, which kind of doesn't really have an awful lot of talking points, apart from a very strange fan feud. But we'll come on to that in a moment. And then we will hand over and we will look ahead to the next soon-to-be championship victory for the mighty Clarence. So before we start, Dave Roberts, in our last preview show, which was, of course, ahead of that Coventry fixture, you gave our listeners a quiz question. What was that quiz question, please?
We wanted to know if our listeners could tell us in which year or years did Burnley set the club record sequence of 18 consecutive home wins?
That was a very tricky question. Adam Dennett, did you have an answer at all or could you guess?
Yes, I did manage to get it after the recording. That was it was my guess. I'll let Dave come on to the answer, but I did manage to get it in the end. Tricky.
Mike, would you have had any idea? Because I would literally have been picking a year out of thin air.
None whatsoever. Let's go with because I'm picking it out of the ether. What year did we win the title? 1951.
Excellent. So we've got a 1951 and Adam Dennett thinks he got it. Dave, what was the answer and did anybody get it right?
The correct answer was, I did say year or years, it stretched across 2 years. It was 1920 to 1921, which coincidentally, or maybe not, was when Burnley won the league title for the first time. So that's when our record run was. And we're not quite there yet. We've got 9 consecutive home wins. So we're halfway there.
This team can do it. This team's going to be smashing records. Did any of our lovely listeners get a question right, Dave?
The only one I saw in terms of correct answers was Andy Richings again was in touch, got it spot on, 1920 and 1921. And of course, Adam, who also got 1920-21.
Who conveniently got it after he Googled it after the recording had been done. I'm just going to throw that out there, Adam Dennett. We know your trick. We know
the
it.
The programme I would have seen.
I know, we did. Right, well, let's have a quick look before we move on to looking at a preview of the show. We have got Mr. Mike Landers on today to talk us through that very impressive and I would say hard-fought win at home against Coventry City. Now, Mike, before we get on to the actual game itself, a little bit of a weird relationship has developed with the Coventry fans. What on earth is going on, please?
It is very strange. It is obviously clearly the most bitter and divisive rivalry in the history of English football. which has been kicked off by the source of all evil in the world right now, which appears to be Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, since there was the Caleb O'Hare thing, there's just been this really weird rivalry, this weird sort of hatred, whatever you want to call it, from both sides over something that literally did not happen.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, we didn't buy him. It didn't happen. Nothing happened.
And you kept him. What's going on?
Yeah, and from that has grown this entire thing. And I'm not going to pick sides because ultimately both sides have been as bad as each other. And on Saturday, it was just you had the idiot doing the minute silence or chanting during the minute silence. To be fair to the Coventry fans, I have to point this out, they were the first lot to try and shut him up.
Yeah.
They certainly did that. But, some idiot thought it'd be funny. There has been footage of things flying across the divide. I was walking out the ground and one lad who clearly had, have tasted his first pint was trying to attack everybody,
Terrabants.
Let's put it this way. Yeah, it was the way he chose it. It was, I'm holding me back. If only my mates weren't holding me back. I'd be there over kicking backsides, and I'm like looking at him going, your mates aren't holding you back, lad.
Yeah, come on.
Well, yeah, it's just the weirdest thing. And I also want to say, Matt's the man of the match. That seemed a wind up.
Really, yeah, did. Let's come on to that in a minute. Before I do that, yeah. Did I see somewhere, and listeners, forgive me, I'm a terrible part-time pro this week, but I was in Austria, so I wasn't at the game at the weekend. I had to give it a miss. And I saw a weird headline, and I share your view with this, Mike. I never know whether anything I believe on Twitter is real or not anymore. But did I see that Ashley Barnes got pies thrown at him, or was that made up?
It wouldn't surprise me, because at the end of the game, I did notice the subs warm down. They normally do their warm down, but they normally do their warm down, a few minutes after everyone's left the pitch.
Yes.
And they know, the stands are empty. And they all did their warm down and they all ran straight down to in front of the Coventry fans. So I'm like, something's happened there. And I suspect, and this is only a guess, but it's an educated one, obviously the players warm up during the game. They run down to that corner. And I suspect things were happening when they were doing that warm up during the game. So I think Ashley Barnes, who has never been one to shy away from things, and Nathan Teller, who certainly he might have a smiley face,
but he's feisty.
He went down there as well. So let's say six and one half a dozen of the other there. I thought that was a bit odd. And I think they had a reason. I don't know what the reason was, but I think they had a reason. So
okay, let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
And we do not condone on the Known and Never podcast the throwing of any item, be it a pie or otherwise. If you're going to throw a pie, though, don't be wasting a perfectly good pie.
That's exactly. Holland's pie is too good, and they're not expensive enough at the turf anyway.
Exactly. Like, let's not do this. So let's move on to then, Mike, and I'm gonna give you the floor again, just mainly because that's why we brought you on the show. Talk us through what many of the media outlets are describing as a below par performance by the Clarets.
Interesting they say below par. Was it below par compared to the rest of the season? Yeah, it probably was. But that's because the standard has been so high.
Yeah.
It was not a good performance in the first half. The conditions didn't help. But I have to say, Coventry were much the better side. They were playing some really nice stuff, some really nice pass and move stuff. They weren't creating much in the way of clear-cut chances, but they certainly were on top. Claret's radar was off. The midfield wasn't doing much. Cork took a very early yellow card, which he justified, by the way, which kind of made him ineffective. But Coventry were much, much that better side in that first half. They could pass to for a start, which we weren't really doing. Our defence was pretty good, I thought. Charlie Taylor in a centre-back, a little bit worried about that before the game against Jokeres. I think he was all right. Bayer was excellent. Muric wasn't really troubled, but you kind of got the feeling at half-time that we were lucky to be going in level.
Mm.
And if we had a second half like that, we would have been very lucky to get away with a point. And I think that's not so much a fault of Burnley as the fact that Coventry, who have been flying, I think, won four out of the last five, something like that.
Yeah.
They were very good, and you could see why.
Okay, so I'm going to bring Adam in just very quickly on this one while we're talking about this. This was a similar theme when we actually played the away leg, Adam, and again, a 1-0 very narrow victory. And we struggled a little bit. If you remember, that was the one that ended a run of equaliser, like conceding equalisers really late on. And I thought their fullbacks particularly caused us a lot of problem at the away leg. What have Coventry given a magic formula that if they could have executed it maybe a little better, that's how you beat the Clarets? Because that's two legs now where we've not won as convincingly as maybe we have with other sides.
Yeah, we've seen teams set out for a draw against us at Turf and not being anywhere near as successful.
Sure.
So credit to them for that. I think we played both wingers right on the touchlines, but we couldn't get them into the game. I think Coventry won the midfield battle, and that just stopped us at source. And going back to what Mike said about Charlie Taylor coming in, I think he did okay, but I think we did miss the distribution that Taylor Howard Bellis gives us. And I don't want to be too critical because it's a new partnership back there. Taylor and Bay, I don't think they'll have played together before, but I think Taylor's in particular slowed the game down a lot in the first half and probably didn't give us that quality that how Bellis normally does, but that is being extremely harsh. They did very well, Coventry, and like Mike said, I think if they were a bit sharper at the front end of the pitch, they got into a lot of positions that really should have troubled us more and didn't have a shot on target. So lucky to go in at half time 0-0. I was happy to go in at half time 0-0. I think the only chance we had really were when Coventry gave the ball away in midfield and we broke quite quickly but kind of got in each other's way, and then J-Rod sliced a shot horribly wide, which I think, given his lack of chances and goals recently, probably snatched it a bit, but we didn't really give him anything all half. Zaruri and Benson, when they did get the ball, didn't look as confident and as potent as usual. And like Mike said, the conditions maybe played a part, but we just weren't on it at all first half.
Okay. Mike, it's an interesting quandary, isn't it, that centre-half pairing, because Taylor Howard-Bellis is a massive loss. What do you do if you're Vincent Kompany in terms of our defensive partners? Do you stick with Taylor or do you bring our new lad in?
Difficult to say without seeing the new lad, really. For this week's game, I'd certainly stay with Charlie Taylor. I'd stick with Taylor for the moment, unless the new guy has, you know, shows something or is perhaps longer term. Because when Taylor was starting at the start of the season, you kind of got the feeling that he was there to hold the hand of Howard Bellis. But then Howard Bellis is just showing how good he is.
Yeah, it's like, no.
He's holding the hand of Jordan Bayer.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, no disrespect to Charlie Taylor, but he's not the future. Howard Bellis is, and presumably Al Dakhil is. So I'd stick with Taylor. He certainly didn't do anything wrong. I think he's probably better for the West Brom game. And then let's see what the future brings. Certainly nothing. Adam's right. You know, he doesn't give he's not the distribution that Howard Bellis is. He's never scored for Burnley, has he? He's only scored a penalty or at least two penalties. So, you know, he's good from 12 yards, but not with the long shots.
Yeah. Did Charlie Taylor score the winning penalty in that cup game that Dyche desperately didn't want us to get through to and look fuming on? Yeah, that was it. He was on the sideline like, great, thanks, Charlie Taylor.
Exactly, yeah. And I think he did it against, I want to say, one of the FA Cup games at home. It was like a Barnsley or something. But, I'd stick with him.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Happy with that. Before we move on then to have a look ahead to the next game, anything else that you wanted to highlight, Mike? Anything else that you wanted to pick up on in terms of the game itself? Or was it just hard-fought victory.
Well, we've got Cork, you know, Cork is hard, but JBG came
off. That's very true, actually. Yes.
Yeah, JBG came off, and it transformed the team, I thought. You know, if JBG, if we had had this JBG for the last 4 years, you know, we'd still be in the Premier League. He was brilliant, and he makes that glue work, you know, going forwards when we need it to work. And it's a shame that, you know, we can't fit him and that first choice midfield in the team all together.
Yeah.
But he's a hell of a weapon to bring off the bench, especially alongside Teller. The only downside is Scott Twine. The lad was literally stripped off and ready to come on. He had taken his shirt off and everything until that goal went in. And, you know, I'm just thinking, whatever that lad has done, he has walked under every ladder. He is every black cat. It's a shame. But how do you... No one predicted JBG to fit in as well as he has and be, I think, an absolute star this season, which is kind of interesting because I don't think anyone expected it to happen. But I'm glad it did because he really made the team tick in that second half. Zorori started playing instead of, as Adam's saying, just hanging around on the touchline. It really began to work, and then everything began to click, and the Clarets just did the thing that they do, which is just basically throw a blanket over the opposition and tire them out. And when they do it, it's wonderful, wonderful to watch.
Yes, it is.
And just on the Mark Robbins, he was criticising his goalkeeper for losing his rag.
Yeah. Justifiably so as well, I thought.
I thought he was completely justified in turning around saying, you don't do that against a team like Clarets.
No.
Because exactly. I mean, it's a comparison I hate to make because it sounds lazy. With the company thing, but it's like Man City. You cannot afford to stop thinking and concentrating against Man City. They'll kill you the moment you do. And Coventry switched off, and we got straight away. And it's blooming good to be on the giving rather than the receiving end these days.
Amen to that. I'm not going to lie, Mike. I am not looking forward to the end of this season because I'm enjoying it immensely. We're going to cover in terms of the Coventry reaction. Let's go ahead now and have a look to the Clarets' next game.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And that Clarets fixture is, of course, another home tie. It is Friday night this week, Friday the 20th of January. We are once again live on Sky Sports, as the Clarets always are these days. We just entertainers. It's 8 p.m. kickoff. Dave, why don't you please set us off with the preview of the West Brom game by giving us the Championship head-to-head.
You may be surprised to know that West Bromwich Albion are the club that Burnley have played the most league fixtures against. There have been 131 past league matches between the two teams, making this Friday's match number 132. Wolves are just behind on 130, and Preston North End are on 127, which will become 128 next month. This is season number 66 alongside the team from the Hawthorns, and most of those, 47, were in the top flight, with just one in the third tier. That was in 1992-93. As this is our 18th season together in the second tier, we want to give you an overview of the previous 17 league matches at Turf Moor at this level. Between 1901 and 1910, The Throstles, as they were colloquially known back then, visited Turf Moor on 7 occasions in the second division and remained undefeated, winning on 5 occasions and drawing the other 2. There was one more season together in the second division prior to the First World War, and that was in 1910-1911. And in January 1911, Burnley registered a 2-0 win thanks to a goal in either half from Benny Green. Burnley also won the next second-tier match at Turf Moor. That was a 2-1 victory in April 1931. That was thanks to goals from George Beale and Louis Page. The next two matches on our list took place either side of the Second World War. Both ended in victory for the visitors by a 3-0 scoreline in September 1938. And then in the 1946-1947 season, there was a rare home defeat, just one of two during that campaign, as Albion won 2-0 in September 1946. Obviously, Burnley went on to be promoted to the top flight at the end of the season. We then jump forward to the 1990s. The only second-tier game at Turf Moor between the two teams was in March 1995. That finishes a 1-1 draw as Liam Robinson's equaliser cancelled out the opening goal from Albion's Andy Hunt. All of the 5 remaining matches on our list took place during the first decade of the new millennium. The first of those, in April 2001, finished 1-1 as Bob Taylor's goal cancelled out Glenn Little's opener. The visitors won again in February 2002, with both goals being scored in the first half by Jason Roberts. Despite having Rob Hull sent off in the next match in January 2004, Albion came from behind to grab a 1-1 draw after Jeff Horsfield scored to cancel out Robbie Blake's opener. We've played in the Premier League more recently, but the final 2 championship matches at Turf Moor were both Burnley wins. The most eventful of that pair of games was a televised match from April 2007, which we're going to keep back as our memory match. And that just leaves the 2-1 Burnley win from August 2007, when the Clarets went behind to a goal from Kevin Phillips in the first half, but came back to win thanks to second half goals from Michael Duff and an Andy Gray penalty. So overall, Burnley's past record isn't great. We've won 4, drawn 5 and lost 8 of our previous 17 second-tier matches against the Baggies at Turf Moor, with just 16 goals for and 27 against.
Excellent. I'm not entirely convinced that our record's going to improve that much this weekend. More of that to follow soon, Clarets, when we have a look at what our predictions are for that game. But before we get there, Adam Dennis, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here because we're going to move on to our new feature for the preview show, which is, of course, most famous celebrity fans. This is the feature that Dave's put for the second half of the season because we've done all the stuff. What did we do first half, Dave? I don't even remember. What was it?
Played for both.
That was it. That's the one. I don't even know my own show. What's going on? Adam Dennett, without cheating and looking at Dave's cheat sheet, did you know any famous Baggies fans off the top of your head?
Yeah, I knew a couple of them. The top two on the list, Frank Skinner and Adrian Childs, are quite out there as being West Brom supporters. I wasn't aware of the others on the list. I don't know if you're going to go through.
We'll go through them in a minute. Mike, what about you? Did you have any on your radar?
I had Skinner and Childs as well.
They're probably the most famous.
So, you know, they were having fun in the 90s TV heyday.
They absolutely were. And it will probably be no shock to you at all, listeners, that Dave has highlighted Frank Skinner and Adrian Childs as being the first and second on the list of West Brom fans. But who else is on that list? Well, for our younger audience, a certain Liam Payne, the ex-One Direction singer. Dave, that one came as a bit of a surprise. Is that legit? Is he? It doesn't strike me as being West Brom.
Apparently so.
Okay, just a quick thing here. How verified are we about these celebrity fans? Or is this just Dave read an article somewhere about somebody who was vaguely connected to his nan's brother's uncle's cousin and decided that they were a fan?
Well, I do that as well, but I also try to hear from the opposition fans. So we try and tweet out before the game, try and get some responses, try and get some genuine fans rather than ones that are just sort of really
tenuous. Starts. Yeah. Well, I feel like I should put a disclaimer here. Listeners, I cannot verify whether this information is accurate. It's not something we're used to doing on a previous show because Dave is pretty good with his stats, but this one literally could have gone wrong. So let's move on. Who else is on there? We've got Frank Skinner, Adrian Childs, Liam Payne. Next two on the list, Lenny Henry, comedian and actor, very popular in the 90s, I would have said, late 90s, early noughties.
Late 70s, all through the 80s and 90s. There you go. 90s. I am old enough to remember this. Yes,
thank you, Mike. I appreciate the facts checking. One for slightly next generation going again, Kat Dealey, West Brom. I've not heard this one before. Who's now based in Los Angeles, I think. So probably doesn't get to see the baggies that often. And then finally, former MP and Speaker Betty Boothroyd. They are your celebrity fans of West Bromwich Albion. Mike Landers, I'm going to ask you to give West Brom a score out of 10 for the standard of their celebrity fans, please.
Out of 10, I think that's probably an 8. Sir Lenny Henry, if I remember correctly.
Ooh, yes, sorry. I'm going to...
Comedy legend. Very, very funny guy. Does a lot of good work. Betty Boothroyd is a legend of politics. Frank Skinner, in the 90s, I was a huge fan of him.
Still am. Sorry? I like his breakfast show on Absolute 90s. I'm still...
I don't listen to that, but he had a number of shows on Channel 4 which were absolutely superb. Liam Payne, I couldn't pick out of a police lineup, but that's
not my favourite One Directioner, not going to lie.
You could have given me any name and any five people, and I couldn't tell them from a group of Tesco shell stackers.
One Direction, Mike Landers. Come on. It's like the biggest boy band ever.
I'm too old for that kind of thing.
That's true. He did know there were five of them. I think he's a secret One Directioner. You know how
there's always five. There's five in every boy band. It's a rule.
Very good point. That's a good point. You know Harry Styles though, Mike. Harry Styles. You know Harry Styles.
Vaguely. Has he been in a film recently with?
He has. Yes, Florence Pugh. See, you're right, Adam. You've called that out.
Pugh. I do know. Anyway.
There you go.
She was in a film. She was in a film called Fighting With My Family, playing
the wrestler.
Riot, the wrestler.
Yes,
I do like professional wrestling, so there you go.
This is not a direction that I expected the preview show to take.
So I'll give 8 out of 10. I think that's pretty good. I think that's pretty good little lineup there. Good range of everything. All ages, all interests. Go for it.
Like it. Adam, do you agree, disagree? Are you going higher, lower, equal, before we hand it over to Dave, the moderator?
Yeah, I'd go higher. I think that's the strongest we've seen.
No,
so far.
Behave yourself.
Like Mike said, really good mix, something for everyone, and a load of likeable people, I'd say. There's no one on there that's going to split too many opinions, I don't think.
Okay, in terms of moderation, Dave, are you happy with that score of I think 9's too high. I'm going to pull that one back. Are we happy with 8 or do we go in the middle, 8.5?
No, I think 8's fair.
8's fair. There you go. Mike's been verified. Sorry, Adam, you've missed out. Let's move away from this nonsense, please, because as Dave already alluded to a few moments ago, we need to talk to you about what memory match we have selected for this feature, please. Off you go, Dave.
For this week's memory match, we're going to go back to the 2006-2007 season for a match which took place on Monday, the 23rd of April 2007, in front of the Sky Sports cameras. The visitors, with Tony Mowbray in charge, were battling for a playoff place. And although Steve Cottrell's Clarets were in mid-table, having ended their torrid run of results, and had already all but guaranteed safety, with three matches still to play. Former Clarets midfielder Richard Chatlow was in Albion's squad, but had to be satisfied with a place on the bench for his return to Turf Moor. There was a whirlwind start, and the visitors were two goals up inside the first 10 minutes. With goals from a Jason Kumas shot and a Nathan Ellington header, which deflected in off Wayne Thomas. Burnley managed to pull one back through Andy Gray after 15 minutes, and then there were no more major incidents until just before half-time, when Paul McShane was dismissed after an aerial challenge with James O'Connor, who suffered concussion and had to be replaced. Shortly after the break, Burnley made their numerical advantage tell. After a right-wing corner led to a scramble inside the six-yard box before Andy Gray fortuitously found the net for an equaliser. And the Clarets completed the comeback as Michael Duff's cross found substitute Chris McCann, who, let's generously say, headed in the winner in the 87th minute, although looking at the coverage again, it looked like it came more off his shoulder than his head. After the match, Burnley boss Steve Cottrell said, "We started the game and didn't do anything we talked about for the first 8 minutes. I've said to them that we don't need to be 2-0 down before we start responding against these sides. We shouldn't have given them as much respect as we did. After that, we deserve credit for getting back into the game. Burnley finished that season in 15th position on 57 points, and West Brom made it to the Championship playoff final before being beaten 1-0 by Derby County.
Oh, there you go. That's a good memory match. I don't really know if I remember that game, actually. But there's that many. Well, before we move on to have a look at the final bits and pieces ahead of that game, you know we like to give you an opposition view. So this week, we spoke to the Baggies podcast, The Baggies Pod, and got their view ahead of the game.
Hello Burnley fans, it's Louis Bent here from the Baggies podcast, here to give some opposition insight into tomorrow's game, which, yeah, I mean, looking back to September, it really wasn't a big game in terms of league position, but now seems for us at least to be quite a big game. The transformation under Carlos Corbrand has been nothing short of exceptional since he took over in mid-October. I mean, we've really enjoyed some of the football that he's played at the Hawthorns and some of the games that we've managed to watch, and seeing the defence really tighten up, which was a serious problem during Steve Bruce's reign, has been something to behold, really, the way that that's changed and the way that things have got a lot tighter and we seem a lot more defensively sound. So, yeah, I mean, so far this season, we've since we last played each other, at least, has been really good. We've thoroughly enjoyed watching Albion again, which I think is a big thing for many supporters, and just glad to be sort of back in that promotion playoff mix, which is nice, and something that we didn't think we'd be saying last time that we met at the Hawthorns, I think back at the end of September. So, yeah, I mean, approaching the match, I think that we'll probably look to try and win the game. I think Corbrand isn't somebody who accepts a draw. I think we saw that against Luton last Saturday when we were when we came back from 2-0 down to win 3-2. We could have stopped at 2-2 and perhaps, you know, settled for a point away at Kenilworth Road, but that's clearly not something that Carlos Corbrand has in his mantra with the players. So I feel like that's something that he's going to look to do. He's going to look to win the game and look to play the same brand of football that we've been trying to do, which is fast in transition, trying to get those counter-attacks flowing very quickly. So, yeah, I think a predicted lineup. Obviously, we played Chesterfield in the week, which is a largely changed lineup. So I'll probably go in goal, Alex Palmer, a back four of Darnell Furlong, Dara O'Shea, Eric Peters, who's a former Burnley man, Connor Townsend at left back, two holding midfielders, sort of Akoya Kushlu drops a little bit deeper than Jason Mullumby, but they'll play sort of on alongside each other. We've got an injury in Matty Phillips on the left-hand side after that cup game at against Chesterfield on Tuesday. So we'll probably switch Phillips out for Grady Dean Garner, leaving John Swift in the number 10 role, Jed Wallace on the right-hand side, and then Daryl Deke at front, because Brandon Thomas Asante will serve the final game of his suspension. Of course, he scored in his first appearance against yourselves last time at the Hawthorns. Yeah, I think Burnley have just really enjoyed watching them from the times they've been on Sky. I mean, I know it wasn't a particularly memorable day for yourselves, but I remember watching your game against Sheffield United earlier in the season, which was very, very chaotic, especially with set pieces and corners into the box, into your box in particular. But yeah, I think I've been really impressed with Vincent Kompany. Always sort of looked at his time at Anderlecht, and not quite sure whether he was going to do a really good job at Burnley. You know, it's a big shift in terms of personnel and style from Dyche's days, but now it seems to be flowing absolutely brilliantly. I'm sure you'll be delighted with the way things have gone. But yeah, thanks very much for having me on, and best of luck after Friday.
Okay, referee is going to be... I'm going to read out the referee, Dave, just give you a little bit of a break. So it's quite a long passage here. The referee for the game at the weekend, listeners, is going to be 36-year-old Australian-born referee Jared G.A. Is that how you pronounce it? Gillette? G.A.?
Gillett.
Thank you. I was trying to be all posh and G.A. But I'd be French because I've been abroad for a week. I think I'm something I'm not. He's now based in Liverpool, and he will take charge of his first Burnley match on Friday evening. So we don't really have any past match stats for you to bring this time. However, he has been the video assistant referee for 5 of Burnley's matches in the Premier League, all between 2020 and 2022. This will be the first time we've seen him in the middle, though, and not, obviously, as a video assistant. The only red card that he's shown so far this season was to Joel Baggin of Cardiff City for a deliberate handball on the line to deny a goal-scoring opportunity in their 2-2 draw with Leeds United in the FA Cup third round. Having seen the incident, Jared Gillett got the decision absolutely spot on, in Dave's opinion. which, as we know, hasn't always been the case for Burnley so far this season. So there you go, Dave. Thank you very much for that referee information. Mr. Landers, how are you feeling ahead of this game? Is this going to end up proving to be the most difficult challenge of the season? Bearing in mind the hard-fought game that we had down at the Hawthorns as well. That was a difficult game. We conceded, of course, in something like 456th minute of the game. So what are you expecting from Saturday? Talk me through it.
Ordinarily, yeah, I'd say this is probably the toughest test that we've had. But the thing is, we've recently had a lot of very tough tests. And passed them mostly with flying colours. Borough came here, or came to the turf, what, 4 out of 5?
Yep.
Absolutely flying. Did nothing. Coventry played well for 45 minutes. Clarence came out on top. We were going to QPR. We, you know, played that lot down the road or when they were flying. All this kind of stuff. So even though they are doing really well, I am quietly confident. Corbrand's done a really good job since he came in, since they got rid of Steve Bruce. But I've looked at their team and I'm kind of like, not sure there's anyone there that's terrifying me. I did see the name Eric Peters, but you know, I'm not sure he's going to actually play. But there's no one there I'm kind of like, you know, massively scared of. The guy up front, DK, he's on a good run of form. He's a big lad, but I'm kind of happy that Taylor's there to deal with him. But I think it's going to be a good game. If you'd have said this time last year with Steve Bruce and Sean Dyche in charge of the respective teams, is Burnley versus West Brom going to be an interesting game? Even I'd have said no.
Yeah.
but under Company and Corbrand, both teams want to play, both teams want to score. And I think we are in for a good game.
I think as well, Mike, it's probably important to note that Burnley side that played down at the Hawthorns has matured and progressed and got a lot grittier back then. It's not as vulnerable, is that the right word I'm thinking of, as it was back then?
I agree. I mean, one of the things that has absolutely massively impressed me about Vincent Kompany is he doesn't make the same mistake twice.
No, he doesn't.
And, you know, the team were making mistakes, but they were different mistakes at the start of the season. West Brom was a very good test. It always is a good test. You know, as Dave said, the team we played the most, they're always a good team. And it was a good test for a young, thrown-together side at that point. You know, going losing 1-0 at the Hawthorns, as far as I'm concerned, is never a disgrace.
No.
You know, so I think it was a good wake-up call. I think the roles are reversed. They're flying, but we've been absolutely putting the hammer down since, what, October?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be, hopefully, I think the weather's going to be decent. It's going to be a cold night, but it's not going to be like a swirly, rainy night. And I think both teams wanted to play it on the ground. It'll be interesting to see how West Brom cope with
the
Clarence pressure, with the smothering, with the way that we pass the ball around. And it's going to be interesting to see how we cope with, because Corbrand, I think he's a bit of a counter-attacking coach as well. So I think we're in for a bit of a cracker, to be honest.
Good. I can't wait. I've actually genuinely, it's very nice to win and it's very nice to be dominant, but I'm also enjoying those that come and challenge us, and actually we get a really good battle there, really good. Adam, what do you do selection-wise? Obviously, we've already covered Taylor. I think we're unanimous in our view that we keep Charlie Taylor in that position rather than bring our new lad in straight away. What do you do about Jack Cork? What do you do about JBG?
I think that's exactly what you do, JBG. As soon as Cork got booked, you could feel around the ground, oh no, there it is. There's the 2-game ban. Oh dear. But Gudmundsson's performance second half, like Mike alluded to earlier, everything good that we did in the second half, Benson's chance, Teller's chance, the goal, all came from JBG, linking with Zaruri and making inroads down that left-hand side and advanced 10 roll. And I think Brownhill got better second half as well. So I think that's an easy decision for Company to make, to bring Gudmundsson in. Whether he sticks with the two wide men from the start, or he brings Teller in and plays slightly narrower, it'll be interesting to see. But I think it will be a really stern test on Friday, because as well as we've come up with the goods in tough games recently, so have West Brom. And I think they've won 9 out of 11, we've won 10 out of 11. They're going to be full of confidence, similar to, like Mike said, Middlesbrough and probably Swans earlier in the season. I think came on the back of 5 wins and we absolutely battered them. But I've just got a feeling this will be different. Corbran is a thinker as well, and I think it'll be a really tactical affair. They've got good depth. I think they've had players like Dean Garner and Rogic on the bench. So they've got options as well. Whereas we saw at the weekend, Coventry just got, you could tell they had nothing yeah. on the bench at the weekend. And we really did push them back further and further into the game. But yeah, it should be a really tough test, but we've got nothing to fear at the moment. Really looking forward to the game. And yeah, still confident we can come away with the 3 points. But
what a statement if we do.
Exactly. If yeah, the next two, West Brom and Norwich, if we come away with returns from both them games, then we're absolutely flying.
Yeah, definitely. Quick score prediction then, please, Adam.
2-1 Burnley.
Mike.
3-1 Burnley.
Excellent. I love it. Where, Dave?
1-1.
Oh, for goodness sake. I'm going to stop asking you. Honestly. Three or four years of the previous show, Mike, this is what I have to put up with. Young Dave.
Davy Downer.
He's a Davy Downer. Honestly. I've given up with him. I've given up with him. Regular listeners of previous show know I have this battle with him every single week. It's fine. What is going to be your Brommers Bankers this week? For those of you who like to have a flutter on my useless predictions, I'm going to say it's going to be a closer game. I'm not quite as confident as Mike is. I'm going to share Adam's prediction. I'm going to say 2-1 to the Clarets. If you do want to put a bet on that, please do gamble responsibly, or better still, use a free bet, because quite frankly, listeners, we're now in the second half of the season and I've not got one right yet. So please do bear that in mind before you decide to follow what Brommers Bankers will be this season. Right, where's my script? I'm lost, Dave. Where are we? What are we doing next? Stat of the week. Yes, Dave. Been a while since we did this live. Treat our listeners, please. Delve into those pockets of yours nice and deep. And let us have your miscellaneous stat of the week.
Yeah, slightly niche stat of the week this week. Between February and October 1926, Burnley scored in 27 consecutive league matches, which still stands as a club record for the longest sequence of league games where we've scored at least once. After scoring in our opening 2 league games of the current season against Huddersfield and Luton, we failed to score in the 1-0 defeat at Watford. But we've scored in all 24 league matches since then, leaving just 3 short of that club record run from 1926. Incidentally, Burnley lost 8 of those 27 matches during the run in 1926. Our only defeat in our current scoring run of 24 games was the 5-2 loss at Sheffield United.
Oh, that's a very, very good stat of the week. Well, that is all we have time for, listeners, in terms of our preview for the West Brom game. Drop us a quick line. Let us know what your score prediction is. Let us know what you would do with a Jack Cork headache. When do you want to see our new defender come in? You know the drill. Tweet us at None and Ever. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page. Or if you feel like it, you want to go old school, you can send us an email at previewshow@noneandever.net. Adam Dennett. What is happening in the world of FPL, please?
Well, Fout Veghorst has made his Manchester United debut tonight. He's just been subbed off.
Shocker.
Yeah, they're currently 1-0 up, but I wouldn't advise putting him in your team with his 2 goals in 20 games for us last year, but the less said about that, the better.
We're talking about United putting him in their team, not the FPL, right?
Well, yeah. we've had some Thursday night games in the middle of game weeks, which makes it very difficult for us to bring you a full update. What I will say is the next deadline for game week 21 is on Saturday at 11 a.m. And then after that, there is a bit of a break with the FA Cup the week after. So we should be able to bring you a full update from next week. And if you can, I'd say for this week, if you can roll your transfer and save for 2 free transfers going into game week 22, we should have a lot more information around blank and double game weeks, given that we've got the FA Cup 4th round and all the rescheduling should be done as soon as that's complete.
Got it.
So, yeah, much more detail to come next week, but, yeah, nothing much to update at the moment.
Sounds good. So basically, you're telling me not to be proactive and get my free transfer in this week. Is that what you're telling me, Adam?
If you can afford to not make your transfer, there's not many injuries to big players around at the moment. That can change very quickly. But if you can save your transfer for a week, then I'd advise that at the moment. Yeah, yeah, but
it's cute that you think I'm that organised. Play my own game, yeah, which is completely different. In fact, was it you, Mike, who tweeted me not so long ago and said, I don't play FPL, but essentially it seems to me that the strategy is doing everything that you don't do. Was it you? That was your tweet, wasn't it?
Yes, guilty as charged. That's probably the last tweet I ever sent as well. But yeah.
Charming.
As a long time listener, I definitely admire the fact that you are giving people betting predictions. I remember when there was the Dawn in prediction league.
Oh, there was. Kevin obviously used to run that. Oh, I was terrible. Yeah,
way back when. And I'm not saying you were far behind everyone else, but you were actually in the same postcode. So well done. Yeah. That's why I don't play those games. The one time I ever played that, I finished last as well. So,
well, you know what it is? I like to think about our listeners, and somebody's got to come last. And if I'm like the park run, what's that person called? The marshal at the end of the park run who always comes last. That is the role that I bring to the Known and Ever podcast. If I'm always last, listeners, yes, you won't be.
You prefer to believe in the fantasy of your own construction rather than reality of life. And that's okay. That's fine. It works.
Invited you on the show. Let's move on. Dave, I believe that we've got a quiz question to finish the show. Get me out of a hole. I'm getting needled by our guests. What's happening? Quiz question. Come on.
We have got a quiz question. We mentioned earlier in the show that West Bromwich Albion are the team that Burnley have played the most league matches against. This Friday's match will be the 132nd. But can you tell us against which club have Burnley played the most second tier league matches?
Ooh, that's a good one. How do our listeners submit their answers, please, Dave?
In the usual way, you can send your answers to us via Twitter. That's at No Near Never, via DM preferably, so no one sees your answer. Or you can email us previewshow@nonearnever.net or contact us on the No Near Never Facebook page, or even on YouTube as well. We're on YouTube now for preview shows, analysis shows. Oh. So getting contacts on there as well.
I've actually got to brush my hair before we do recordings these days, and it's shocking. I'm not prepared for this, and I'm scruffy. Right. Girl's got to get on it. Yeah, well done, Mike. Well done, Mike. Do you think you know the answer to that question?
It's a bit of a left field one, bro. I think
it's Dave. Don't read it out.
Left field selection. I don't know, for some reason Borough jumped into my head. Whenever we play those, it's tended to be in the second division.
I think, Joe, I like this. And we're not going to give the answer away because I don't know what it is. But I was thinking somebody like Ipswich. It might be somebody like that.
They came into my head as well. The team that you associate being in the second division a lot.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Yeah,
so Borough. I'll go with Borough.
I'm going to go with Ipswich. Let's see. Listeners, you know what to do. Well, that is all we have time for this week. We have dissected that very weird Coventry game, and we have looked forward to another fantastic and very highly anticipated championship fixture at home against the Baggies. My thanks go to everybody who has contributed to making this podcast, not less our guests, Mike Landers, Dave Roberts and Adam Dennett, who have provided all of the insight for this show. As ever, this show is brought to you proudly by the TalkSport Fan Network. I've been Natalie Bromley. Until next time. The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Natalie Bromley is the host and editor, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Richard Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, Adam Dennett and Robbie Kopak. Our music is provided by George Gaskill, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonearnever.substack.com. Our thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are as ever proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.